Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Oh, you are kidding, Tommy. So I then turned it on there, and then you must have turned it on automatically. Have you turned? What's going on, Tom? Are you and I?
Are you hungover today, Jim?
Are you?
No, I'm sweet.
No, okay. Well, I'm a little bit. Anyway. A couple of beers last night at the K Ranch. Shout out to Mick and the team down there at the K Ranch. 1300 01 1170. The text line. Lots coming in here. But first, thoughts on the forward pass, boys. What do we do? Where do we apportion blame? What impact did it have on the game? And do we need to go to forward pass technology? Nod.
Well, it definitely was forward. It's just very hard for the referee to try and get in line with that all the time. Do we need to introduce four touch judges effectively so that there's two staying with the defensive team and two stay on the attacking sides type of movement? So that in these games, and it probably only mean it would be very hard to do probably in the regular game because regular rounds because you're asking for a lot of people, or whether that's the professionalism where you go. I don't know if the chip in the ball will work. I'm not convinced that you put a forward pass chip in the ball and they can pick up the technology and all that type of stuff. So I think that's probably a fair bit away. But if you put effectively, it's up for the touch judges to try and rule on the forward pass. And if they're in a better position to be in line with where the players more regularly because there's four of them, then it'll solve some of the problems. The pass went forward. And Webster solved it or took it pretty well by the fact of saying we were beaten defensively and we should have fixed our defensive errors, and then that scenario doesn't happen. But it hurt him a little bit.
Here is Andrew Webster post-match re the forward pass.
Mate, so much has happened in our season, and I appreciate where you're coming from, but I don't want to talk about that right now. We're just talking about New Zealand, the Warriors, how proud we are, how we want to get better. It's the technology and everything like that can get sorted out at the end of the year. I'm not interested in that right now. Thank you.
Yep, that's typical Webster there. He's just been like that all year, mate. I'm big on the presses, Jimmy. I love watching it.
The losing press conference.
Generally, it's the losing because it shows a lot about a coach when they're going through a tough time and how they react and, you know, whether they get baited by the media and take it. And he's refused to take it all year. It was clearly a forward pass, like Noddy said. It's probably the one ruling in the game that still has so much grey area around it and very hard to find an answer to.
Yep.
The touchy and the referees, was it Andrew G last night or Jared Sutton?
No, Jared Sutton
and whoever the touchies were.
I'll tell you who they were.
They were helped by the fashion in which the Brisbane Broncos beat the Warriors.
So it wasn't a one-score game.
No. You know, it was the forward pass, happened whilst the Warriors was still in range, but in the manner in which the Broncos carried on to continue to win, Webster's right. The accountability has to be there on the Warriors to be better. You only really talk about the forward pass in big moments over the last couple of years. I think back to the Parramatta Cowboys game with a crucial one, Mitch Moses last year.
Yes.
And that meant a lot more. Like, that sent the Cowboys home. And that, you know, led to the Parramatta Eels going on to the grand final. So, in a way, I think the touchies help, but it is the one ruling in the game right now that we're really struggling to fix.
Phil Henderson and Drew Ultram, whoever was wearing yellow boots was the one who was supposed to be in line with the pass. It's very hard to keep up with Reece Walsh, so right. you're not going to be in line with that. And Jared Sutton, I took a photo of the still. I paused it and had a look, and he may have been obscured by a player, and that's when you're looking to your touch judge, help me out here. But I would think Adam G's going to referee his first grand final, would be the way it go. Because of the distance between the teams on Friday night, I think that there was no big decisions to be made. As a result of that, he'll referee his first grand final.
When you watch it, when you watch back the vision, it's easy to tell. Do we want the bunker to referee to interfere when it's blatant, right? So if it's, you know, it's just like, you know, when they go to him and they're unsure about what's happened and they back the referee's decision. But if it's blatant, they intervene. Do you think there's a premise for something like that, Noddy, Jim, where it's Because everyone could see.
When do we stay out, though?
Yeah.
Like, look, if it's less than a metre forward, do we stay out? Like, what's the...
But also, the ball can float forward as long as it goes backwards out of the hands.
Yep.
That's the rule of the game. So then you're asking the camera angle to make sure that where are the hands facing, where does it go? Because in our game, it does float forward because we're running and passing the ball. So it goes backwards, but it gets caught in front of where you pass the ball from. That's just the nature of how the ball floats.
Yeah. Peter Volandis has spoken out. We should look at it. Absolutely. Any help we can give the referees, we should. I have the greatest admiration for the job all of our referees do, but any assistance we can give them to relieve some of the pressure would be common sense. We'll look at during the off season in our general review. So I think you guys have summed it up really nicely. Like, where do we use it? How accurate is it going to be? If the touch judge was there on the spot doing their job, that's their responsibility. Mm. But you understand why they weren't, because Reece Walsh is really fast. All these things combined. Now, you wanted to give us some stats on Kevvy Walters.
Yeah, just when you're talking about him before and you brought him up, and as we're talking about, the fact that they wanted an old boy to come in and coach the Broncos. They were adamant they wanted an old boy to come in and coach the Broncos. They'd gone off in a different direction. The old boys were up there.
Well, Anthony Seibold kept the old boys at a distance.
That's right. And then they weren't happy with that. So then they got what they wanted. And Kevvy got the wooden spoon the first year. Didn't make the finals the second year. There was everyone saying he can't coach. He's not a very good coach. He can't coach. Well, he's just proved all that wrong in 3 years of coaching at the Brisbane Broncos. But
he's learned a lot in 3 years, hasn't he?
But if you think, I just went through quickly his career. He started obviously at the Canberra Raiders.
Yes.
In the late 80s, early 90s, late 80s actually, which is when they were pretty successful. So he went into a pretty good environment in the Canberra Raiders. He played in a reserve grade side down there won the comp.
He won the grand final in first grade.
Yeah, won the first grade. And then obviously 1988, the Brisbane Broncos come into the competition. 1990, he returned to them.
Yep.
He holds a record for the most finals appearances, 12 for the Broncos. And has won 6 premierships, 5 at the Broncos and 1 at the Canberra Raiders. So he's won at 89 at the Raiders, 92, 93, 97, 98, 2000.
Yeah.
So as a player, he's a winner in those big games, knows those in right, and knows the power of what can happen in Brisbane being a successful club. And then obviously goes off and goes to the Cattle and Dragons, and then goes off and learns some coaching with Craig Bellamy.
Yep.
And then eventually goes home and pursues this opportunity to become the head coach of the Brisbane Broncos. And now they would love him up there. But I think, listen to him say, oh, look, you know, from where we've been, I really appreciate this and we've got to enjoy this. He went to 6 grand finals.
Yeah.
I remember speaking about when the Melbourne Storm was set up. Now you get a bit older and you think, we were always set up successful from the start. John Rebo was the guy who was the owner of the club, who was a part of the Brisbane Broncos.
Yep.
Chris Johns was our CEO at Melbourne Storm, who was also a part of the Brisbane Broncos franchise as a player and then turned into his administrator. And Glenn Lazarus is our captain, who'd won grand finals at 2 clubs.
Yeah,
as our captain and as our front rower. So I always thought, and Chris Anderson, who'd come from both North and Southern Hemisphere premierships.
So the interesting part about that, I'm reading that part of the book of The Wolf You Feed, Andrew Webster's biography of Wayne Bennett, and they talk about the sacking of Wally Lewis at the Broncos. Yeah. At one point, Wally was playing 13, and the halfback was Alan Langer, and the 5/8 was Kevin Walters, and the hooker was Kerrod Walters. So he moved Wally Lewis out of that to put Kevin Walters in that 5/8 position, and 2 years later got the payback that they win their very first competition. 1300 01 1170. I know, we're going to get to the text messages. Apologies about that. We will get to them. There's heaps there. 0457 736 736. Look at that. 40th anniversary of the Australia 2 victory in the 1983 America's Cup. So there you go. I know exactly where I was. I was going to school in year 6 at Wallenbean Public School. Much excitement amongst the students in that one. All right, let's get to a break and then we're back with more.